listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah. Listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Hope everything is well with you today. We had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, need to do, should do, better do, must do, can do, will do, and wanted to do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, you got things done anyway, because we appreciate you for your tenacity, for your stick-to-itiveness. Get it done. That's what we need to do as a people. Don't put stuff off. We have to get things done in a manner, in a timely manner, because nothing is promised. Everything we should be about is moving towards independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. That's right, brothers and sisters, sovereignty. We need it for African people. Nobody outside of us tells us anything about what we can and cannot do. And that's the method we should go by. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media, here on Mondays. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, then you go to the website, look for other programs, hit on other programs, and then one of the programs, of course, is African Perspectives, and then you can follow that for previous recorded programs. We do have a new web page, thanks to Brother Elliot and what we're doing here at Black Talk Radio Network and Time for an Awakening. Immediately following my program is the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3. Every Monday and Wednesday, the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with your host, Brother Franklin Jones. Also on Mondays in the evening, Acres of Diamonds public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, also from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. Thursdays, 7 p.m., Relationships with Joy and Troy. Every Thursday, 7 p.m., Relationships with Joy and Troy. Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it is time for an awakening, brothers and sisters, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays, 8 p.m. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then on Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com, and you can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses by going to WeBuyBlack.com. But if you are in the Atlanta area, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, so check them out at the Greenbrier Mall, and they'll have laundry detergent and all kinds of good stuff for you right there. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Tahembe. Brother Bamani Tahembe, he has prepared once again to go to Ghana. He is leaving in a couple of weeks. And it is May 22nd to June 4th. And a 14-day trip to Ghana. And he also has two other trips this year. November 22nd to December 2nd to Johannesburg and to Cape Town, South Africa. And then he has another trip to Ghana at the end of the year, December 24th to January 4th, 2020. And that is going to Ghana. Check him out at AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see video, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007, Africa for the Africans. Shrine of Black Madonna, located here in the West End, and they have all the things that you need. They have furniture. They have clothing. They have the red, black, and green shoes. They have books. Man, do they have books. And they have the artifacts and, oh, you name it. The hours of operation are Wednesday through Saturday, 12 to 7, and then on Sunday from 1 to 3. And it is located 946 Ralph David Abernathy in the West End here in Atlanta. And the phone number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They have a history course every Saturday of Know Thyself, taught by Brother Olutunji, and that is from 1:30 to 3:30. From 1:30 to 3:30 every Saturday, Know Thyself. But if you cannot make that, but you would love that, have that information, they have a multimedia library. That's right, brothers and sisters. It is an extensive cultural library. It's over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, over 2,000 books. It is, brothers and sisters, 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. So you check that out. Another bookstore that we also promote here is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, right next to We Buy Black. And the Medu Bookstore, if you go there and they don't have the book you're looking for, believe me, they'll get it for you. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Another bookstore is Brother Kazimde Ajamu, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The number to call is 404-519-8107. And there's light in the black dot. They also have the red, black, and green shoes. And there's a new one coming out. That's right. A new shoe coming out. Can't wait. I tell you. I love what they're doing. I'll be doing a program Friday, May 24th, 7 p.m. A historical. I apologize. A journey through our historical greatness and African perspective. I don't know what's tying me up right here in my mind, but yes, it is a history presentation that I do, and I'm going to do it at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore Friday, May 24th, 7 p.m. Our journey to historical greatness and African perspective. So please come and check that out. Come check out the bookstore. I would hope that you can make that. And, of course, the bookstore in Lithonia is located 6984 Main Street, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. Cafe Ulu. Let's start with Ulu. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family Center Economics. We have a broadcast every Thursday. The Thursday night broadcast is at 9 p.m. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Every Thursday. Follow us also, too,
Because we are a cooperative, we pool our resources to create goods and services and jobs for our people. We have developed Cafe Ulu, located 2036 Sylvan Road. We had a nice Mother's Day program yesterday. It was well attended. We really appreciate the work that Sister Akina is doing. It was outstanding. And the brothers and sisters, Sister Shay and the cooks, Derek, also outstanding. Of course, my main man, Brother Jelani, really appreciate the work that they're doing at the cafe. Cafe Ulu, open Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we sell coffee. We have African coffees. In fact, a brother came in the other day with a coffee from Angola. And that would be pretty nice addition to add to the already coffees that we sell on a consistent basis of Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, Burundi, you name it. And we have loose teas. Everything sold at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. Everything. Because it is all about us, lifting us. One of the products that we promote as well is Ambrosia. It's a vitality drink produced by my good brother, Brother Novak Young, Ambrosia. He also has a new drink coming out. And that's going to be coming out very soon. And we would like to be the ones that debut that drink, I would hope. It would be nice for Cafe Ulu. Akabin Institute, please don't make donations to Akabin Institute. A-K-O-B-E-N, Institute. Akabin Institute, make your checks and money orders out to Akabin Institute. Send to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. And also, too, they're having the complimentary conference. I need to get that information. At the end of the month, at the end of May 31st and June 1st, the complimentary conference. The importance of brothers and sisters working together. Juneteenth Day, June 14th through the 16th here in Atlanta. And it's going to be a big day. Parades and all kinds of good stuff happening. So we're going to talk more about that. And I'll get the brother who runs Juneteenth Day here to discuss that as well. So we have a lot of things, a lot of activities happening. And I hope that you will be able to join. Tomorrow night. On HBO, Muhammad Ali, What's My Name? A new documentary. Maybe there might be some scenes that you haven't seen. I'm anxious. It's almost like a 3.5-hour program, or even longer. That part one and two will be shown, and I think it starts at 8 p.m. tomorrow. No, Tuesday. Yes, tomorrow's Tuesday. Tuesday. So, I mean, I know the basketball game is on, but to me, there's nothing more important than Muhammad Ali and Malcolm. There's a new documentary from Malcolm. Yeah, it basically, I've seen pretty much of it, but one of the people that I met in the Pan-African Federalist Movement is Brother Baba Peter Bailey, and he was with Malcolm. He was there with Malcolm. They show pictures of with him all the way up to the end, to the time that he was assassinated in an autobomb, February 21st, 1965, Sunday afternoon in the autobomb ballroom. Brother Peter Bailey was there, and he also worked with the OAAU. So it's a new documentary. So hope you get a chance to check that out as well. Yep. Inye Sesim, the Book of Revolutionary Daily Thoughts. Of course, today is the 13th, but I want to read some previous, looking at yesterday, May 12th. Oppression not only makes a wise man mad, it robs him also of his self-respect, Alexander Cromwell. What happens to a mind oppressed without hope and without knowledge of hope's possibilities? Look around. See the individuals concealing themselves from each other, dressing up spiritual pain and mental privation with whatever artificialities their plastic will purchase. Minds catapulted beyond sanity no longer believe in self. But madness is the difference. For existing in a state of confused rage can be a good sign, a sign of healthy and vitality if you have not lost your sanity. For it only means you have been unable to reconcile yourself with this particular reality. You cannot make human sense of your conditions, situation, or prospects knowing inside that your power places you outside and above this deranged matrix. What you see does not fit what you know. What you see is not rational, given a creator and a righteous universal order. While insanity may do so, madness will not always rob Africans of their self-respect. In fact, it can do just the opposite. No matter how confused and enraged, if we are clear enough about our divinity and our oppressors in divinity, and we unfailingly work to empower ourselves and those we should love, our rejection of the insanity all above us, all about us, only serves to increase our self-respect for ourselves. Struggling to be sane in a sea of insanity can do something less than strengthen us. Can do nothing less but strengthen us. Affirm, I am perfectly sane in this insanity. Affirm, I am perfectly sane. May 13th. Rise in wisdom. Leave ignorance to those who have a passion for it, and you'll meet with more truth. Michael Colbert. Eldership, like ancestorship, is earned. An old fool without vision, who gains satisfaction in promoting a defeatist attitude amongst his or her progeny, should be dismissed for the fool he or she is and has spent a lifetime becoming. However, those elders who work to hone warriors for that certain inescapable final battle should ever have our complete attention. Affirm, the wise have my attention. Affirm, the wise have my attention. Ashe. And she say some. The Book of Daily Revolutionary Thought. You know, on this day, almost 35 years ago, I remember it distinctly. City bombed American African neighborhood, killing children and adults 34 years ago. It was 34 years ago on May 13th, 1985. And I remember going to a a board meeting of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. Our president at the time was from Philadelphia, Brother Charlie Hendricks. And I don't know, I guess he, you know, being a member of the fire department, and he had bought the line of the authority. So what we got was the fact that MOVE had to be removed. The people that but to remove them, to destroy a whole neighborhood, man, if they had to be removed, it could have been, I don't know. But yeah, they dropped the bomb on them. Yeah, just like the Gap Band, Charlie Wilson, you dropped a bomb on me. Well, what they were singing about and what happened here also is that this government, the only time that this country has been bombed, the only time this country has been bombed from the air is when the authorities of this country bombed an American neighborhood. They did it in Tulsa in 1921, and they did it in the Osage community in West Philadelphia in 1985. You dropped a bomb on me. In fact, the Gap Band is Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. That was the neighborhood of Black Wall Street of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. It was 34 years ago on May 13, 1985 at 5:20 when a state police helicopter took off from the command post flight pad at 63rd and Walnut Street. Flew a few times over 6221 Osage Avenue and then hovered 60 feet above the two-story houses in the American African Residential West Philadelphia neighborhood. Lieutenant Frank Powell, chief of the city's bomb disposable unit, was holding a bag containing a bomb consisting of two sticks of dynamite of Tovac, TR2, with C4 added, which was concocted by a fellow unit member, police officer William Klein. After radioing firefighters on the ground and lighting the bomb's 45-second fuse, and with the approval of Mayor Wilson Good, American African, and insistence of Police Commissioner George Sambor, Powell at 5:28 tossed a bomb onto a bunker on the roof. This was followed shortly after by a loud explosion and then a large, bright orange ball of fire that reached 7,200 degrees. As a result, he, the mayor, the police commissioner, fire commissioner, William Richmond, city manager, director, Leo Brooks, and many police officers committed, in the words of Philadelphia Special Investigation Committee, better known as the MOVE Commission, member Charles Browser, a criminally evil act that led to the death of 11 human beings, including 5 children, and the destruction of 61 homes, and the incineration of thousands of family photos, love letters, heirlooms, jewelry, inscribed Bibles and Korans, and many other irreplaceable mementos. As told to me by Mr. Browser, my mentor and author of the tell-all book entitled Let the Bunker Burn, 5 of the city's most influential American African political leaders met at the mayor's home before dawn on that May 13th date in response to the mayor's invitation and the warning that I'm going to make a move on the MOVE house this morning. This was in connection with what Good said were complaints from Osage Avenue neighbors and what he also said were alleged arrest warrants from a judge. But it should be noted that those neighbors had attempted to stop the police siege of their community as soon as they realized what was developing. In fact, as the 5 influential American African leaders watched the TV broadcast of the military-like assault unfolding with preliminary shots and tear gas fired, 2 of them repeatedly urged the mayor to call it off. In particular, City Council President Joseph Coleman, sitting at the mayor's kitchen table, told him the 500-strong police action was excessive, and State Senator Hardy Williams, standing near the kitchen entrance, said, "Why don't they just back up and relax? Nobody's going anywhere." More than 500 cops fired over 10,000 rounds of ammunition in less than 90 minutes in a racist assault on an American African community. Yes, it was definitely racist. Powell, the bomb-dropping cop, was Caucasian. And Klein, the bomb-making cop, was Caucasian. As insightfully stated by Browser, "I knew none of that would have happened in a Caucasian neighborhood, and so do you. You know it wouldn't have happened." Even the entire MOVE Commission confirmed this, was pointing out in one of its final official comments that this would not have occurred had MOVE's house and its occupants had situated in a comparable Caucasian neighborhood. I must explain what Browser meant by military explosive. Tovac TR2 was a commercial explosive invented in the 1960s as an option to dynamite, and its purpose was to dig trenches through rock in order to lay pipes. The TR, an abbreviation for trench, and the 2 refers to the second DuPont Company item in its trenching product. The company's explosive products division was located only a half hour from Philly in Delaware State. But not one fire or police officer ever cared enough to contact DuPont and ask what could happen if TR2 was used in a residential neighborhood. If they had asked, DuPont would have told them that it had been designed for and used for underground purposes only. It gets worse. As horrifically explosive as TR-2 was, Klein fired things up even more. Exercising his independent judgment, he decided that TR-2 wouldn't be strong enough to breach the bunker. Accordingly, he unilaterally placed a 1.25-pound pack of C-4 on top of the two sticks of TOVET, despite the fact that the U.S. Army in 1979 had ended distribution of C-4 to all police departments throughout the country, but has documented in an October 22, 1985 letter from a special unit who headed the FBI's Philadelphia office, approximately 30 sticks of C-4 had been delivered to the city by the FBI agent without the city requesting it, and it was offered as a proposed solution during discussions about the anticipation and the confrontation with the move. And it gets worse. The children and some of the adults were shot and killed by police as they were fleeing the flames and surroundings. The police covering the alley leading from the rear of the move house had automatic weapons and shotguns. No one ever claimed move had automatic weapons or shotguns at the scene, and no automatic weapons or shotguns were found among the ashes. Police officer William Stewart, a 28-year veteran of the department and a firearms instructor at the academy, was asked by investigators, "Did you hear gunfire at the time?" Meaning around 7:30 p.m. when people were fleeing the move house from the alley in the rear. He responded, "Oh yes, automatic fire." When asked who was firing those weapons, he replied, "Police officers. All the stakeout officers were running into the alley. They all had Uzi machine guns." Strangely enough, 16 days later, he told the MOVE Commission that he had never heard any police officer's gun fired in the alley. But fire department lieutenant and firefighter John Joseph Murray, who were veterans of the Vietnam War and who were in the vicinity of that very same alley, said they did, in fact, hear automatic fire when the MOVE members were running away from the flames. In fact, the fire lieutenant pointed out that he saw at least three MOVE members in the yard next to the alley. This was corroborated by police officer James DePlessis. The officer reported by the city's own medical examiner provides proof from the autopsy of 6 of the 11 dead, namely Thomas, Delica, Phil, Nada, Tree, and Rhonda, that they did not die inside the flames, but died outside from gunfire. If, as the police later testified, those victims died from the flames that exceeded 2,000 hellish degrees inside the house, why was Thomas's long hair still long? Why was Phil's body not burned? Why was Netta still wearing her bright white blouse with red trim? Why were Tree's public... Why were Tree's pubic hairs and blue jeans still intact? Why did Delica's body and Rhonda's body still in them in mental fatigues consist with gunshot pellets, as noted by the FBI's ballistics expert? Even MOVE's commission chair, William Brown, stated, "I firmly believe that more people got out than Birdie and Ramona. I believe someone someday will deliver a deathbed confession." The overkill police presence, the military style assault, the malicious bombings, the callous burning, and the evil shooting at fleeing victims were not just grossly negligent and unconscionable, as the MOVE Commission officially noted in the findings, number 15 and number 18. They were also murderous, because murder in Philadelphia is defined in 18 Philadelphia as criminal homicide with malice. Criminal means illegal. Homicide means the killing of a human. And malice means wanton disregard for life. It also means evil intent. According to the city of Philadelphia, murder 11 people, including 5 children. Saying their names: Thomasa, 7 years old. Delica, 9 years old. Phil, 10 years old. Nada, 11 years old. Tree, 13 years old, along with adults CP, Conrad, Frank, John, Rhonda, and Teresa. Never forget, always avenge. The move. The move murder. You know, what was interesting about that, like I said, I remember being at a conference and we were talking about the move, but this was very early on. And it almost seems like whatever the authorities said at that time, prior to the investigation, it was justified. But when you see the destruction and you see the what happened, you could see that it was not. You could see that it was murder. You could see the situation for what it is. I tell you, brothers and sisters, it is sad. But then again, it is par for the course here in America, what happens to us and what happens to our neighborhoods. And it's like that today, and it's like that forever. I think one of the things that, as I was watching the Malcolm documentary, and I don't know, the Malcolm documentary, please get a chance to watch it if you haven't. But it still seems like they're still yearning and hoping for some kind of coalition of people, you know, to make America great, make America stand up to what it says on paper, you know. And the reality to that is America is a facade. America is a lie. America is evil. America was evil from its inception. America was never great. America will never be great. And it can't be great when something is great when you establish on a foundation of greatness. And greatness is not murder. Greatness is not treachery or deceit. Greatness is not exploitation. Greatness is not imperialism or colonization. Greatness is when one gives, sometimes even unconditionally, for a better outcome for humanity. That to me is greatness. But, you know, I know Mr. Farrakhan made a term. He was talking about, and this is what got the European Jews in a serious uproar, when he was talking about Hitler. He said Hitler was wickedly great. And he explained the term, but because they just heard Farrakhan say that Hitler was great. See, and I'm saying the same thing here, using the word great. Because the word great is associated with something positive. The word great is associated with something grand. Something good, something big. And that's not America. That's not the expansion of Europeans. That's not the imperialism of Europeans. That's not the colonization of Europeans. That's not great. Now, you can make an argument that's great for them, but it's not great for humanity. Look what it has done. Look what has happened to humanity because of what they have done. Look at the world today. And see, I think the problem for us, just like in that documentary of Malcolm X, we keep hoping that a new generation will not be like their forefathers. We keep hoping that a new generation will be more inclined to be willing to work with one another, to change the dynamics. Well, let me just say this. Considering what the European established for himself, the European is firmly entrenched in this country, economically, socially, politically, in any other way. The religion, theology that is practiced, everything it speaks to the European being in total control. That's like I said many times before, there was never anything about integration. That's a fallacy. To integrate something means that whatever qualities and whatever things that you have to bring to the table, you bring them. Whatever qualities and things that I have to bring to the table, I bring them, and then we bring them together. We integrate them. That was never the case because, number one, the cracker thought that we had nothing to bring. And considering what the cracker had done to us, that mindset was firmly entrenched within him and also within us, that we had nothing to bring. And so everything was done through his dictate. He dictated everything. So that was an assimilation. And those who could assimilate the best based upon what the cracker wanted, they got favor. For those who resisted, of course, you know. But the idea is that you want to be like the Caucasian. And the Caucasian couldn't stand anything that he couldn't control. So that's why there is today, no, I repeat, no place like a Black Wall Street or Boley, Oklahoma, or Elaine, Arkansas, or Rosewood, or Raleigh, no place in this country where there's a community of American African people that act independent. And there is no place in this country where we can truly be independent, self-determining, liberated, or sovereign. There is no place in this country that we can exercise that human right. Because the Caucasian runs this, and he has eminent domain over everything in the country, even if he wants to take, in, like he's done before, indigenous people off land that they were that they allocated because of some, whatever reason. I don't have to make some up. I'll just go to a couple of years ago. That's right. The pipeline. The access pipeline. They wanted to run it through was that Bismarck, one of them places in North or South Dakota. And the city said, no, the Caucasian says, no, you are not going to do that. So they made a decision. They're going to just run it through the indigenous people's land. Didn't ask them. Didn't have a conference with them. They just did it. And then when they protested, you see what they were met with. And you didn't hear nothing on the nightly news, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, or whatever else. Nothing. You saw it online. You may have seen it in Facebook, like I did. Then Barack said something. And then, of course, when Trump was elected, they knew it was over. They knew that we're going to run that pipeline through the indigenous people's water and in their land. Yes, of course, the pipeline busted it. It messed up their water. It messed up their land. Of course, as they said it was going to do, and it did. But once again, it's mind over matter. they don't mind doing to others what they want to do because to them, those people don't matter. They could care less of how you feel about something. If they want to do it, they're going to do it. And the fact that they run this is eminent domain. Now, we've seen some very staunch individuals with their property, like the Caucasian. Where was that at, man? She helped out, and she says, I am not selling. She's the only property left there. All around her, you know, is being flattened. Oh, man, what was that about? I can't remember now. But, you know, that's happened before. I remember seeing these two skyscrapers next to this little old lady's, her house. And of course, those individuals paid dearly, and they paid an attorney to fight the battle for them. But just like Walmart told many communities, especially smaller communities which had general store, mom and pop store, hardware store, pharmacy, and so forth, that they knew that once Walmart moved in, or even in the vicinity, those places were over. They were over. I seen that piece on 60 Minutes about 20-some years ago, maybe longer. Because now I'm getting, in terms of time, I've been out of the firehouse for, 13 years and off the job and been here now for going on 5 years. Time flies. And so, but anyway, I saw that particular piece, and basically what the other piece ended saying, Walmart saying, well, we lost this battle, but we're going to win the war because we got deep pockets. Eventually, we're going to get them. But, you know, that has happened. That has happened. So, you know, reason why I continue to mention these things, I continue to bring up the fallacy of this society, the lies, the inconsistency, the deceit, because we keep holding out hope and believing that somehow, some way, through some kind of miraculous divine intervention, some kind of epiphany, that somehow those who are in authority will realize the only way that this country truly can be great if it embraces people and respects them for who and what they are and respects their humanity and allows those people to grow within the society. And that the society is not dictated by one group over another. That truly, that people come to sit at the table, and not only do they sit at the table, they make decisions at the table. Just sitting at the table, I mean, that's one thing. We want a seat at the table. A lot of times, you can have a damn seat at the table. That don't mean a damn thing. And when they are pushing forth ideas, and even though they may have a vote on something, that ain't it. Because the real decisions might be in the back door or on the golf club, on the golf course or at the country club or in some other secret meeting that you definitely don't have attendance to. See? So they could have done something different. But again, understand something, brothers and sisters, about the Osage community in West Philadelphia. There is, and never has been, and never will be, any respect for African life by Europeans, by Caucasians. Because if there was, given the history of what they have done, then they will be willing to correct it. As you can see, they ain't about correcting nothing. And they're not about to give reparations. They're not going to pay the debt that they owe. And I know that because of the discussions by political candidates about reparations. You know, in fact, if anybody's listening from Philadelphia, what was the monetary outcome for the brothers and sisters who lost their property? And I mean, I know, you know, some of the MOVE members, Pam Africa, I know she's been on the case for quite a long time. You know, Ramona Africa, I believe, was released. But what was done in this situation, if there's any kind of updated information about what happened to that community and how it was restored and people got their homes back, whatever, I don't know. But the reality is that there is no respect for who we are as a people in this country or on this planet. And the reason why is because of European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. The global phenomenon that it is has caused other countries as well to look disfavorably or down on darker skinned people. And that's a fact. And there's nothing that we can do to change that. The only thing that we must do to change that is change ourselves and change the way we think about ourselves. Don't even worry about that. Think about who we are. Think about what we were and what we could still be. Think about the situation as it presently is and what we can do to come together and to support one another. We got a caller, 267-267. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, brother. It's your brother Ralph.
Hey, Ralph, how are you? Thank you for calling, man.
I've been listening. I just, you know, but... You know, my views sometimes ain't too popular, so I...
Well, that's not true. I love them. But yeah. I can't hear you, Brother Ralph. You're breaking up on me.
Yeah, I'm going to take you off Bluetooth.
Okay.
I don't know the exact figure, what they got paid.
Okay.
But I know they did they bought a home in the King Sesson area, but any figure wasn't worth all that, Brother Oshie.
Yeah.
Plus, the contractors ripped off that whole neighborhood as far as building up the houses. They're just getting back up that neighborhood now. Just getting back. And, that was done over 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
And they're just getting to Osage Avenue to rebuild those houses that a contractor ripped the city off and building up, selling, only to see those houses crumble down. Man, that whole thing was a fiasco.
Yeah. But oh, yeah.
The thing that really disturbs me, Brother Oshie, and I don't know if you heard Brother Elliot and show last night, but these politicians, and you know when people were celebrating the first African American president, I knew it was trouble because they were celebrating the first African American mayor that said he would bomb women, children, and a black neighborhood again and again if he had to, and that was Wilson Good. So I tell you, we have to. And you are a person that talk about sovereignty. We have to realize that we do have an open enemy overseeing us right now. We can't even get to the real enemy because they got an offensive line around them and they're taking the blows while delivering blows and keep getting voted in office, man. So I don't know what it's going to take for our folks to wake up and realize that we do need an independent party. We need to start looking at self, which was Elijah Muhammad's whole program.
Right.
Self-help. We have to forget You heard what Elijah Muhammad called this man. And he hasn't been, I mean, anybody that goes around that can't take, they cannot accept the truth. They want to believe in their own lies, even though they know they're lies. They want to believe in it.
Right.
You know what I mean? They, right. So we can't correct that
no.
if they want to believe in their own lies. So we should stop wasting time with that and start examining ourselves.
I agree.
Now, I was listening to Brother Franklin Jones, and I agree with a lot of what he has to say. And I was listening to him even getting at the thinking patterns of our people. I was in, I gotta tell you this, man. I was in Rite Aid yesterday. It's a pharmacy up here. And two little chocolate cute sisters, man, maybe about 19, maybe 20, stationed as they were at the cash register. And they were talking about, like, I don't want no Jamaican, you know, with the beady beads in his head. I want me one of them light-skinned brothers, one of them light-skinned-looking Jamaican guys, or, you know, and with the good
hair.
Looking at both of them, and they both got weaves in their head. And I said, like, sisters, what's wrong with the beady beads? You know, it's just ugly. I don't good hair. I said, well, you have beady beads. Yeah, and you know what I mean? You got beady beads. You're trying to say what you have. You know, I try to, and then all of a sudden they just gave me the bird and continued talking. You know, so some of our people don't want to be helped, brothers.
No.
You know, and that's the perfect example.
Right, right. You know? There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm almost at the point where we got to leave the cannon fodder alone and just those of us with a like mind go on ahead and do what we have to do, brothers. But, no, that was a travesty in that neighborhood. A bomb dropped on a black neighborhood just like Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yep.
Women and children murdered.
Yes.
And you know, I know that the phone lines, you know, you're going to have other phone calls. But what I wanted to say real quick was we have to stop that nonsense about our folks died for the right to vote like our folks are stupid or something. They did not die for the right to vote.
No, they did.
They were murdered trying to get some justice.
That's right.
But you cannot, this beast does not want to hear anything that's the truth. He doesn't believe that way. No. We need to stop wasting time with him and start concentrating on us and in the manner of self-help. So I just had to call in this morning, brother.
I appreciate
let you
that.
Know, I'll be listening every morning, even though my views aren't too popular with a lot of people, I said we got to put the responsibility on ourselves.
Right.
If we want, because the beast ain't going to do it, man.
Well, listen, your views, Brother Ralph.
The beast is doing what he does.
That's right. That's right. It's no coincidence.
No coincidence.
Well, your views are always welcome here, brother. You know that. And we appreciate you, man. All right, keep listening.
All right, Brother Oshie. Right. I'll continue listening.
All right, thank you. 631-631.
Good afternoon, my brother.
Good afternoon.
I'm a first time caller, man. I just want to before I start off on my little rant, right? I just want to tell you that you have an amazing show. I've been listening to you for a while now, and you hit spot on with everything that you've been saying to get our people to try to wake up.
I appreciate it. Thank you, brother. Thank you.
I'm just going to piggyback a little bit off of what your previous caller was just talking about. We have to deal with these charlatans and collaborating, buffer, token Negroes. That's all in politics. That's preventing people from obtaining or doing certain things. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And as far as it deals with us as a collective, man, and we have to really learn. I'm from the generation of the 80s or the 70s. I was born in the 70s. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, the generation prior to me, they dropped the ball, and we're feeling the effects of that throughout up until now.
Right.
Now.
Well, you know, that generation, what happened was that generation coming out of the civil rights movement, you know, and there was a belief that that this country and these white folks were going to do something right. That
they fell for the banana in the tailpipe. There were charlatans back then, Baynard Rustin, and the rest of them, you know, that were the buffer zone back then,
yeah.
Right? With the exception of King, I think King just got caught in the crosshairs. No pun intended. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We have to, you know, it's time, man. Throughout these cities where they're gentrifying, you know, I'm originally from New York, and I saw the writing on the wall years ago when I pulled up when I got to the train in Times Square and I saw National Guardsmen with AR-15 rifles and bomb sniffing dogs and state troopers that had those rifles on the trains, and people were under, you know, mad hysteric amounts of pressure, and I said, look, I gotta get out of here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But right. I noticed something, right? And there's one thing, and I hope you can answer this question for me. What group or what two groups of people, with all this gentrification stuff that's going on throughout the country, right? There are two groups of people that are immune to gentrification. Can you tell me who they are?
Well, the only ones that are being gentrified is pretty much us in our communities.
It's us, but
you know, and so there are other communities that are Jewish communities.
I'm not even talking about the Jewish community because they're white. They're white
right.
people. You
exactly.
understand what I'm saying?
Yes, they are.
Or should I say Europeans? Right?
They are.
I'm talking about the Asians, right?
Okay.
The Arabs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the Dravidians, man, right?
Okay.
Because they stay on code and they practice group economics to where they're literally, especially the Asians, running
right.
things, right? They're not
right.
in politics. You don't see any of them in any kind of political realm, right? If it is, it's on a minuscule scale, right?
Okay.
We keep falling for this stuff time and time again. But my faith is in the younger generation, because ever since the death of Nipsey Hussle, right, that was a major game changer, eye opener, where people are getting it now.
Well, let me just say this about that. I hope that our people are getting it. Getting it means that you should have no faith at all in this system to do what's right. The only faith that we should have is within ourselves, to come together, to support one another, to believe in one another.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. I agree 1,000% with you. But the main thing is about ownership. It's about ownership, right? I was doing some research, and I was on the web, and I seen there are certain neighborhoods in the Midwest that are ghost towns, literally. They're selling, they're putting apartment, tenement buildings up for sale, $300,000, $250,000, right? Now, why can't we get on the page to say, okay, can we find 100 people, 500 people to put up a few thousand dollars a piece to purchase this stuff and start from there, you know?
You see, that's what Latinos are doing. That's what Latinos are doing in various cities.
Exactly. That's another group that practices it.
Right.
People, we're getting it too slow, man. And the sands on the hourglass is running out, man.
Yeah.
It's running out.
Yeah.
You know, before it's coming to the brink of where, you know, we're being exterminated, man. You know,
well,
you know, we're being exterminated. You know, me, fortunately, you know, I live in a decent community where, you know, I don't trust any cop. You know what I mean? I don't trust any police or law enforcement. But still, at least they, you know, they're decent. I put it at that.
Okay.
You know, they approach you with respect, right?
Yeah.
right? But I'm no fool. I drive around with my firearm.
Okay.
You understand?
Okay.
Because I don't want to take no chance. I'd rather have a little bit of a percentage of an outcome if something goes left on my end.
And I understand that. And it's better to have it.
I've been schooled. I take it back to you know, I've been schooled by some old timers, man, that was part of the BLA, you know, you take a page out of Herman Bell and those brothers' books. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
I'm not cut from the cloth of this generation or from the civil rights generation. You know,
okay.
I'm from that era where, you know, we used to throw bottles at the police and throw refrigerators off the project roofs at their cop cars where they were scared to death to come into the project.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
So we
just got to get it together, man.
We do.
You know, but you know, I got faith in my people, man. Like I said, I'm not going to take up no more of your time, man. I just continue to listen.
I appreciate
your show, man. I hope you're here for like another 20 years, man.
Hey, as long as I can be, brother, believe me, I'll be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, right here, African Perspectives. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate you calling, man. So continue to do so. Okay, what's your name, brother?
My name is O.
O, my name is O too. Yeah. I'm Oshi. I'm brother Baba Oshi, or brother Oshi. Pleasure, O. Okay, man. You have a blessed day.
All right, peace.
Peace. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, more discussion. In fact, I want to get off into Stephen Biko. I know I always mention him at the end of the program, but I want to read something about brother Stephen Biko and the sacrifice that he made. And so when we come back, we'll do that. And we still have some callers, so I'm going to take care of those as well. So you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Mom. I played it Friday, and I said I would play again today in honor of Mother's Day. I'm quite sure that's a song many of you haven't heard in quite some time. It was off the Last Days and Time album of Earth, Wind, and Fire in 1972, three, somewhere around there. But you should break that out on Mother's Day again next year. It's a great song. Other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media. My program, of course, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Right following my program is the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 on Mondays and Wednesdays. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds this evening from 6 to 8. Following Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. On Thursdays at 7 p.m., Relationships with Joy and Troy. On Friday, Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. On Sunday, Revive, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And I said we're going to talk about Stephen Biko. You know, I always use this quote, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This is a battle for the minds of our people. And what the European has constantly done is try to destroy, this is Bobby Wright, menticide, destroy our minds. And even though he has been and will continue to be a, quote, minority of humans on the planet, but it still does not prevent him from controlling the planet and controlling other areas where he is not a numerical, quote, majority. Because pretty soon he won't be a majority in this country. But what the Caucasian will do, he will make honorary Caucasians, Hispanics, mulattoes, or half-breeds, or what's the other word, you know, of mixed-race people, mulattoes. You know, there will be the buffer. There will be the buffer between us and our legitimate will and aspirations of freedom and equality against the Caucasian, the mulatto. That has been a practice. And you can see that happening. Because if you can't see it happening today, brother, that means that you are not opening your eyes. You're not being aware. It's on the commercials constantly with the Caucasian and a sister, and then she's a light-skinned sister or brother light-skinned. This whole dynamic is constantly. And, of course, many of the people of that mixed patronage, so to speak, will identify with being Caucasian. They'll identify with being Caucasian. We have a caller, 602. 602, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Marcus. Brother Marcus, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, good brother. You know, when that story there about that movement.
Yes.
Brings tears to my eyes, brother.
Yes.
When I see what these people do to black people, bring tears to my eyes. I look at what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oh, those people going there and kill those people in that community.
Yes.
You know, and it goes to show there ain't nothing we can do in this country. Ain't nothing black people can do in this country.
No, it isn't. What we can do, now it'll be difficult because
we're going to be fighting within ourselves and fighting outside of us, those who are manipulating us, those who are undermining us, those who are trying to control us through our own people. But what we can do is eliminate that, close ranks, pull our resources together, and start to grow and build for ourselves. I mean, it's the only logical thing because, you know, when I throw out that statistic, Brother Marcus, using a 100%, of 100% of American Africans, of us here today in this country, of 100%, 40% of us are at or below poverty. 40%. Another 40% are 2 to 3 paychecks away from being at or below poverty. That's 80% of us. 80% of us. And that at or below poverty piece was born out with that shutdown of the government. How it impacted a lot of people, particularly our people, because why? We're depending on that paycheck each week for our sustenance, for our survival. And so when it's interrupted or is lower, it definitely hurts. So that's 80% of us. So that leaves 20%. Of the 20%, 10% are doing well. They're doing well. They have pensions. They have good jobs. They live in gated communities. They live in subdivisions. They live, they have beautiful manicured lawns. The inside of the home is immaculate. But they don't own nothing. We don't own nothing. We don't control nothing. We are consumers. We're targeted consumers. Then the other 10% are living exceedingly well. Those entertainers, those sports figures, those individuals who have, and even politicians, because politicians are bought off. They don't even change nothing. So those are the dynamics that we're dealing with. So the 20% are highlighted. The European puts those 20% out there to see, this is to what you can do. Don't be talking about the societies now, this, that, and the other. Look at these people. They're making it.
Yeah, you ain't making it because it's your fault. They blame us. They put us in the predicament, and then they blame us for being in that predicament.
Sure.
You know, as I said, ain't no solution for black people. Because whatever we build it, they destroy it.
Right.
They destroy it, and we are vulnerable even living with these people, living in proximity with these people. We are vulnerable because they could poison your water, poison your food. We got to go to them for everything. We are totally dependent on them for everything.
And the reality, Marcus, they have done it. Even though you're saying it, but they actually did it. The things that you just mentioned, they actually did. They poisoned the water when those brothers and sisters moved out to Los Angeles, Allentown. They poisoned the water. They did all kind of other heinous things. They destroyed good communities under the pretense of one of us accosting a Caucasian woman, which they knew was a fallacy, but any excuse to vamp on our community, to steal whatever goods that we had, and then burn our community down and either kill or imprison us. Now today, Brother Marcus, there is not one community that we could say is totally a community that is self-sufficient, that provides jobs for its people, that has goods and services for its people. Nope. There's not one. And like I'm saying, here, when people talk about Atlanta, I've been in Atlanta 5 years, but I've been coming here since the 70s. Atlanta is not no damn Mecca for us. Atlanta is pathetic because we don't own one damn grocery store. Hell, they ain't even a cleaners.
Wow.
We don't even have a service station in the city of Atlanta. We have a lot of other stuff, but we don't have the things that would be important to us that we need on a daily basis. It's not provided by us. So no, don't come up with this Atlanta stuff. And other cities are anemic and pathetic as well.
Wow. So the only solution, you say, is to get out. Go build ourselves. Yeah, because And everybody coming in is replacing us, replacing yes. black people, because yes. they don't need us no more. They don't, you know, they use us no.
Oh no, brother! You know, hey, there's no more cotton to pick. Okay.
Yep.
There's no more cotton to pick, and there's no more manufacturing to that level yep. where you didn't yep. need more technical skills. That ain't happening.
Yep.
So our situation here is tenuous at best. It really is. And yet our leadership or lack of leadership doesn't address it because it's not in their interest to do so, because they want to maintain and sustain and help the privilege that Caucasians have so they can be rewarded. We have more people in political office today, and yet our situation is worse. That isn't even that's not even logical, but it's true.
Exactly. Political power and no economic power. Political power without economic power is no power. Is no power at all, you know. Anyway, Brother Oshie, thank you for this program, brother.
We appreciate you, Marcus. We appreciate you listening, man. You take care. You have a blessed day.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Oh, yo. What's happening, brother?
Hey, Jay, what's happening? Hope you had a good weekend, man.
Hey, listen, let me ask you something right quick. Where is that filthy, no good, Negro Wilson good at today? Is he in the public?
I have no idea. Maybe somebody from Philly, maybe Ralph can tell us, maybe, you know, pose that question to Brother Elliot, man. I have no idea. I have no idea. But if you listen, but if you listen to what Brother Ralph said, he adamantly said he would do it again. You know, he became firm in the belief that move was the problem, and that move had to be moved out by any means. And to drop a bomb on that whole community just because of that, instead of isolating move and finding whatever else you could do to get rid of him. No, you destroyed a whole community. You destroyed lives.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's just what you call a pure evil gatekeeping Negro, man, because, you know, it's unfortunate, but we as a people don't deal with our traitors in the manner that our good brothers over in South Africa do with the burning tire. You know what I mean? The necktie. The burning necktie.
Yeah.
That's what they need here in America for a lot of these Negroes. You know, I mean, that's just the real.
Give them a necklace, huh?
Unfortunately, you know, we don't really practice that type of behavior. I mean, you know, like you were just saying about Atlanta and Atlanta being the so-called black Mecca. But if you really think about it, and like you said, how could you be a Mecca of anything if you can't feed yourself?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You don't even have
when you don't run nothing, you know, even to I bet you any money, the two malls, Greenbrier Mall and West End Mall, aren't malls owned by us. And there's a lot of stores in them that are not us. You see?
Well, that goes to show the mentality of our people, unfortunately. We want to be in the position to always serve the dead. I was telling a friend of mine last night about that. I was trying to say, you know, you got to invest in your grandson if you want him to survive in this society. Because the way things are today, 10, 15 years from now, Brother O.C., you think the Negro catch it out now? He's going to have a foot implanted in his ass all the time. Because, like Brother Marcus was just saying, the crack is losing his usefulness for your black ass.
Yeah.
You don't have no reason to carry you any longer. And the way the system is, there's no real safety net for you to survive. So, you know, I mean, I tell every kid out here that I deal with, look, find you a trade,
That's right.
And learn you a couple of languages.
That's right.
I said, look, if you could get into STEM, get into STEM.
Yep.
And it's not that hard. Be able to learn the necessary skills to be able to make yourself valuable to you and to be as self-employed and be able to survive as possibly you can, you know? I was talking with a friend the other day, and the friend was telling me that his daughter wanted to become a veterinarian. I had to say to a brother, ask yourself this question. How many black people take their pets to the veterinarian? And do you really think white people gonna allow their children to be worked on by a black person? The quacker loves his dog and his cat more than he do his damn children. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now think about it. Think about it. How many veterinarians have you seen that are black? How many black people take their animals to veterinarians?
Well, let me say this way. I here in Atlanta, I don't know, and I'm quite sure where I came from, Milwaukee, there may be very, very, very few American African veterinarians. I would imagine here in Atlanta, there are some American African veterinarians simply because of the population, you know. And so here's the opportunity if you want to become a veterinarian, because just like all, like everything else, you know, only in a larger city would some of the Caucasians come to you in your services. But if you're in a smaller community, and particularly a rural community, ain't nobody coming to you for nothing. Okay?
Hey, listen. A cracker, I live in New York City, brother. I'll give you a perfect example. I had to take my cat one time to the veterinarian. And it was a public veterinarian. I think it was the ASPCA or the Humane Society. Let me tell you something. When I went in there, Ochi, I saw no black people. I saw nothing but white people in there with their little brothers and sisters. And the crazy thing was, they was looking at me like I was damn strange because I brought my cat in. So I know that most black people do not bring the animals to the veterinarians.
It's too expensive. It's a serious expense. It's a serious expense. You know?
Listen. Sometimes you pay the expense.
Right.
But the thing is this, though. We as a people are constantly placing ourselves in a position to be dependent on the daddy. So hereby, you got your kids going to college, getting a massive amount of debt that basically they ain't never gonna really be able to pay off, and then be in a situation to where as you now dependent on your enemy to employ you so that you could pay it off. But the process is, if we were educating our children the right way, they wouldn't be caught up in that situation. If we was giving them the necessary skills like the brothers and sisters that were coming out of slavery were basically trying to galvanize themselves to a situation to where as they could be independent of the white man. And you see what the white man did to them. Look at Tulsa, look at Rosewood, look at all of these places to where as a black man is trying to be independent and do something for himself, that is decimated by the cracker. You know why? Because we don't place ourselves in a secure position to be ready to die. You know what I mean?
See, the other thing is, though, Jay, the other thing is, Jay, that we have no group think. We don't think about each other. We bought into the idea of what America is: individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America is about, and we bought into that damn near hook, line, and sinker. Okay, So we don't give a damn about anybody else. We want to buy something. We don't care that we should really be about learning a trade, learning to be an electrician, learning to be a brick mason. Learn, you know, see, we haven't bought into that. See, because we want to beg crackers for jobs and then spend our money with them, you know, and make them rich.
There you go. So the question becomes, how do we change that paradigm? What do we do to place ourselves in a position to where as we as less dependent as possible on this cracker? That's what we're facing. Because, see, if you think about it, the cracker just does nothing but manipulate the Negro at every drop of the dime. He does it with politics. He does it in every form of manner that he can to trick us to believe that if we support this cracker and get this cracker in the office, this cracker gonna do something for you. It amazes me. It amazes me the manner in which we revere no good niggas. Look at Kamala Harris. Her history has shown us that she's a no good niggas towards African people. But what do? We still look for ways to big her up. We still look for ways to put her out in the forefront in hopes, like that other special Negro that we had in the House, Obama. Look at him. Look at, what did we get in return for that Negro being in office for 8 years? I mean, could you concrete tell me what did indigenous black people or black people in general get in return for his 8 years of being the face of black America? Could you tell me?
Sure.
Are we in the position?
Sure, I could tell you. Sure, I could tell you. The idea, the very thought of a black man being in the head of his country. The very idea of a black man and a black woman and their family living in the White House. The idea of him being the leader of the free world. The idea. That's what we got. A romanticism. That's what we got. No, we got nothing substantial. We got symbolism, Jay. We got symbolism instead of substance. That's what we got.
Hey, Oshi, think about the direction of the country. Now, in the last 6 years, you've gotten to the point now to where you got an open, twisted sister, monkey man, gay mafia member running for the cracker's house. Never would you imagine that type of degenerate lowlife would be in the forefront of American society and didn't have the nerve to have a husband or a wife or whatever the hell you want to call a twisted sister freak and be accepted. Could you imagine that happening in the days of Ronald Reagan?
No.
I don't even think it could happen in the days of Slick Willie Bill Clinton.
Well, because of the homosexual community, and which of course is a broad community, but the homosexual community has individuals within that community who have serious wherewithal. They're serious wherewithal. What brought the light to me was about, I don't know, once again, my depth perception on years has kind of changed, but it might have been 20-something years ago, turning the TV to the Tony Awards. The Tony Awards are for stage play. And I just watched it for a minute because I was just, you know, channel surfing. And when I turned it on there was this guy up there and he told this other guy to come up and he kissed. And like, damn, the in the theater is dominated by European homosexuals. To me, that's how the perception I had.
I think it was Harvey Firestone who it was. Mm-hmm. One of the most amazing, twisted monkey bears ever in public sphere. I think that's who it was, you know? But the bottom line is, They're now the cultural dog, bro.
Right. That's what I'm. That was the point I'm making.
Surpass the black man. The homosexual got more power in this country,
yes,
and more of a say so than black people do.
Because the homosexual, Jay, because the homosexual is a cross-cultural piece. There, contained within the homosexual community are different faiths, different ethnicities, male and female. It is very broad, and they have wherewithal. They have money. So that's why you see the homosexual community thriving the way that they do, as opposed to the American African community. Now, but number one, the American African community will always be put into a position where they are because we have no cohesion. We have no collectivism. We don't support one another. We don't trust one another. We don't respect one another. We don't love one another because we've been trained not to. And that training has been very thorough.
We want to integrate. We always want to integrate.
Exactly.
And the homosexual, if he's going to integrate with you, he's going to dominate you. He's going to change the way you feel and the way you think about him. But the Negro can't do that. Based on what? His skin color. You understand what I mean? They make certain homosexual blacks into celebrities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the reality, there has been a serious effort to defeminize American African men. Serious effort, almost from the beginning, from the buck breaking of the rape of African American men during our captivity, all the way to the present.
You know, nobody has never really publicly addressed the rape and the brutalization of black men that continues today, even in the prison system and outside in society. I mean, think about this. Do you know that Isaiah Thomas' son was raped multiple times? And to show you how twisted he came out and what you call him? He came out and spoke about it like he was a woman being raped. That's how twisted it is. You understand what I'm saying? You got so much degeneracy going on in this country that is under the radar but is above the surface. And if you're not attuned to certain things, it would blow your mind.
Well, you know, the reality is that I advocate, well, you know what I advocate.
Right.
You know. You know, and I'm staunch. I'm unwavering. I'm committed. You can't say nothing other than independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Anything outside of that is moot, is bull. But when you look at the context of our situation here, it speaks to the fact that this society is the way it is structured. And the way Europeans handle it is designed to eliminate us, defeminize us, to separate us from each other, separate our families. I mean, all of it, it is all there. But yet and still, we keep holding out hope and hoping and praying that somehow, you know, all of that will go away and we'll be kumbaya. We'll be working this thing together. We will never, ever be treated with dignity and respect and given equal opportunity. Equal opportunity. Because, see, there is opportunity in America. I would never argue the fact that individuals can achieve whatever they can achieve. I don't argue that fact. That's a given. But what I do argue is the fact that African people, particularly American African people, have been undermined. They've been manipulated, been scrutinized. They're targeted for their very destruction, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. They're targeted, and it's happening. We're experiencing, even though our population is young, even though the cracker are experiencing negative population growth, but we're experiencing they're experiencing negative population growth. We're experiencing the fact that it is equal. We're not producing either. Our numbers are not increasing, even though we got a young population. Because why? Of mass incarceration, drug addiction, homosexuality, and other factors. So the reality is this.
Do you realize the ethnic groups that are doing the things that we need to be doing that are now placing themselves to within the next 20 to 30 years to dominate us? Do you realize that? And do you realize that Cracker is trying to save himself towards that same?
Well, let me say this, Jay, let me say this. Let me say this.
Do you know what group that is?
Let me say this. The Latinos, the Asians, anybody outside of us, the Cracker will co-opt them. Okay? So white rule will still be maintained. Okay?
And it won't be as dominant. It won't be as dominant. It will be co-opted. But the most dangerous species on the planet in the United States right now is not the Negro. They done already got us. We're a wrap. It's that Latino. It's that Latino. The Latino is more of your enemy than the Cracker is, if the truth be told. You just don't realize it yet.
See, because once again.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
We are under the illusion that they're going to be our ally. Whoa. The Cracker Whistler will come out every time. I've seen it too much in my lifetime already. And imagine when they get more in a dominant position, how they will do us so dirty that it's going to absolutely blow the mind of the Negro. Let me tell you something. Tell your kids now to form some sort of relationship someplace other than America. Get your children today to be able to go someplace else other than America, because within the next 20 to 30 years, black folks are going to be in a world of trouble.
Well, see, let me tell you what can offset that. An immediate direction towards Pan-Africanism. Just as Dr. Clark said, a dynamic Pan-Africanism that is cultural, technical, and spiritual, giving on a foundation of the old, of what Africa has represented, to what the new, what it can become. That's the answer. Jay, I'm going to tell you, this ain't me, because I don't give you my opinion on this program, because my opinion is profane. I would be cussing my ass off every damn day, because I don't hate white people. I don't say what I say because I hate. I don't hate nobody. But let me tell you what I do hate, Jay. I hate a system that these crackers created, giving themselves a top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position, because it has deleterious effects on us, and it is worldwide. Worldwide, Jay. Nobody wants to be with African people. Worldwide, the darker skinned people on the planet, who are the first people on the goddamn planet, are disrespected, dismissed, degraded, misused. Yep. So I'm saying, Jay, only solution for us, and I don't give a damn what those so-called politicians say, the so-called religious leaders say, and none of them damn fools. The only solution for us is unity under the banner of collectivism and Pan-Africanism, embracing who we are as African people, going there to Africa, supporting the brothers and sisters there, kicking out the Chinese, kicking out all those others, and controlling the land, controlling the resources, communing with nature to make sure the migrations of the animals still happen, make sure that we're controlling the energy, plan for solar, plan for wind. That's what time it is.
Oshi, I agree with you, but you know what the sad thing is, brother? And I really say this. 8 out of 9 Negroes, 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10 Negro don't know a damn thing about Pan-Africanism and don't want to hear anything about that one thing that could save us. You know, O.C., if you think about it, what has been done to African people by this cracker is absolutely mind-boggling, man. If you really think about it, he's done something that I don't think history will ever be able to totally explain or understand.
Right.
And the sad thing is, man, that a lot of us have, in a sense, forgiven this low-down, stinking, dirty bastard instead of being on our square in a constant and continuous rage against this cracker. That's why anytime I hear somebody talk about integrated with this cracker, it just irks me to the bitter end. Because I know, and history will show it, that we've never been in a position in this country whereas it's been an even Steven play. And if there ever is an even Steven play, the cracker never wins. The cracker never wins. That's why we dominate sports in the manner in which we do. But the sad thing is that we don't come together with one another and solidify a position of our survival. We don't even think in those terms. That's the tragedy of it. So many of us think it's all right. You know, to listen to a young person say something about diversity. I mean, Negro, I'm like, how could you ever talk about diversity when you've never read a book, you've never been in the job market, you never even experienced life other than the fact that you may have went to school with white folks and your parents are telling you and talking to you about something that they don't even truly understand but a vision for you. That's what they, a vision for you. It's just like I was telling you last week about Roland Martin, No Neck, talking about blacks being on the board of directors of Fortune 500 companies and all that. That don't help black people the way it should. It never have. All that does is make the individual you put on the board rich. Condoleezza Rice, the perfect example. She gets over $1 million a year for being on board. Why would I want some Negro like that to get $1 million a year and not support it because she's black? How did that make sense when the Negro don't do nothing for the liberation of African people?
The bottom line is that we do not do for ourselves and stop begging others to do for us. We are a people destined for extinction. And that's hard to believe because of the multitudes of numbers that we have. But the reality is, with all the things, just as Dr. Bobby Wright said, I had that tribute to him last week, Monday, and I read to him what he was talking about. And at the time that he talked about it, there wasn't even a discussion about AIDS. Wasn't no discussion about Ebola or any other disease or any other mind-altering situation. It was none of that at that time. And he was putting, he was hitting the nail on the head. And
so think about this, Oshie. How is it that a person could articulate something 30, 40 years ago and it's as applicable today as it was 30 or 40 years ago, and the Negro still don't get it, still don't accept it? What did that tell you about that people?
Exactly. What that tells you is that whoever did this to these people's minds had done a damn good job.
Hell of a job.
A hell of a job. Because they cannot see the forest for the trees. Their minds are totally messed up. They believe. They've been trained to believe what that group of people who did this to them want them to believe. And for us, it is coming soon. It is coming soon. So Brother Jay, I got to go because I got to get the other programs on the air. So I would like to stay longer. You know that. But I got to get ready to go, man. I appreciate you. You have a good day.
Okay. And I'll look forward to Wednesday.
All right.
And now we can look forward to Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix.
There you
go.
Hotel. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. I am going to talk about Stephen Biko, hopefully Wednesday, if I don't have a guest, because I think we need to learn about some of the people that we talk about and who they are and their struggle, and to emulate that, believe me, because that's what we need to do. We need to look at our ancestors. We need to look at our historical figures. That's why I say to you all the time, this is not me saying this. I rely on our ancestors. I rely on the history of us as a people. That's the bottom line. In the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But that's not the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Brothers and sisters, we appreciate it. Abibi Fohodio means our victorious destiny. Peace, family. Abibi Fohodio.